Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And Alex, how do you think you're going to die? Just out of curiosity.
Slowly.
Yep, I can see that happening, yeah. So, but wouldn't it be great if you could die laughing?
That sounds painful.
That's as much of an icebreaker as I can get to with you today. But good news, on the show today, we have Craig Campbell back on to talk about a new game that he has coming to Kickstarter, Die Laughing. Craig, thank you for being on.
Hi guys. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Yeah, this is not a die slowly game. This game plays pretty quickly, so.
Okay. Good. Like, when I think about Die Laughing, I figure there's probably a lot of story behind that. I'd also wonder why I'd want to do it. So please explain to me why I want to die laughing in the first place.
Well, it's a role-playing game, a tabletop game, uses dice, and it's kind of a short play. It plays in about an hour or two, and it's GM-less, although you could argue that it's kind of one of those GM-less games where the GMing responsibility is sort of shared by everybody. Like, everybody will get a chance to kind of sort of GM a little bit, but we can talk about that in a minute. Die Laughing is called that because it's a horror comedy game. In the game, you're all playing characters in a horror comedy movie, and everybody's going to die. There might be a survivor, but no guarantees. And it's really a question of when your character dies and how funny you can make it. And once your character is gone, there's a number of things that happen that keep you involved in the story, so you still have something to do. The big part of it is that you become a producer on the movie, and you have mechanics in the game that allow you to continue to influence the story and kind of mess around with stuff to make the movie better, and to plague and consternate the other players who are remaining with their characters.
Mm. Yeah, do I have to make the movie better?
You don't have to.
Okay, good.
I'd like it if you made it funnier.
Oh, okay. That works too.
No, knowing Nathan, he's going to make it worse and everyone on set's going to die.
Yeah, and for realsies, not even in the movie. It's just a hazard all around. So this is like, if I imagine I'm on the set of a B movie, I'm kind of like trying to make this come to fruition. And that's sort of what Die Laughing revolves around.
Right. All the monsters that are available in the game, every time you play, you use a different monster. There's a whole bunch of different character archetypes, so you can switch up, play different characters, have different groups of characters. So it's got a replayability factor of just kind of trying all sorts of different things. Each of the monsters is kind of like a spoof version of like a classic horror monster.
Yes.
There's the mad slasher with a lot of weird weapons. There's the crazy clown. You guys have seen the monster sheet for?
Oh, I'm looking at it right now, and it's terrifying. Yes.
there's a couple of different kinds of ghosts. There's a sexy vampire. There's dismemberment goblins.
Perfect.
Giant irradiated insect. So you can kind of do that 1950s, 1960s, Cold War, nuclear scare, giant monster, giant insect kind of thing. There's a whole bunch of them. So you can kind of mix and match and play all sorts of weird monsters. And each monster has kind of a few unique things about them, but they are otherwise there to kill all your characters in most gruesome and hilarious fashion.
Oh, okay. Do they have like a kill off kind of thing? Like they're all in the same spot at the same time and they have to go battle royale on the poor kids at the camp? who just went there thinking that they'd have fun in the sun, and now all the monsters are coming in at the same time.
It's really one monster at a time. If you really wanted to do multiple monsters, I never thought about that. You could probably just alternate back and forth between different monster pages, right, and just have whenever the monster attacks, whenever the rules of the game tells you a monster attack, you could just decide, right, whoever's the director at the time could say, no, it's this monster this time. That's perfectly acceptable, I suppose.
Right.
But the game is set up such that there's basically an act and a scene structure. Everybody has a character. In any given scene, one of the characters is the lead character. That character's player is the lead player. The person to their right is the director for that scene. So their character doesn't get involved in the scene. The director rolls dice on a table in the book, that gets you a prompt for a scene. And it's broken up by Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. So Act 1 is kind of like a lot of setting things up, introducing characters, developing relationships. Act 2 is about escalating all of the problems. And then Act 3 is like a lot of monster attacks and different ways to deal with the monster and to resolve the story. And then there's triggers. There's certain things that happen that bump you to get you from Act 1 to Act 2 to Act 3 as you play. So the director sets things up. The lead player decides who they want in the scene with them for that scene. And then they play out the scene, and then they make some everybody at the end of a scene makes everybody who's in the scene makes a trait check. And that determines some things about how things move forward.
Yeah, I guess when I was thinking about like Battle Royale mode, I guess I was thinking like, you know, like Freddy and Jason or Alien v Predator. And like, wouldn't that be intriguing? To just have them kind of face off against it. I guess I just wanted to be the crazy clown. I guess that's really what I was looking for. But Alex will probably tell me that I already am one, so I shouldn't.
Well, there goes my one-liner.
There, my new thing is stealing all of Alex's lines.
There are horror movies where, you know, one of the characters kind of snaps and kind of loses it, and you know, it's the game is very narratively open. Sure. So you can take your characters in a lot of different directions, just kind of, you know, you use the framework of the scene to kind of get from the setup to resolve what the scene's supposed to be about. Like it might be a scene that's about an argument, or it might be a monster attack or whatever. But within the scene itself, you can kind of do what you want and kind of float around through different things. And everybody who's playing a character in that scene will contribute to that. So, I mean, if you're fighting the crazy clown and, you know, late in the story, you want your character kind of snap off and start painting himself with clown makeup and doing all kinds of nutty stuff, I'm not going to stop you, because yeah. Eventually the crazy clown's going to kill you. Or you're going to be the character that survives and has to be put into a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, hey, you know, which of these scenarios do you think is going to work out better for you? But it is important to note. So my goal is not necessarily to live. Like, it's very unlikely that that's going to happen.
No. The buy-in when you play the game is the character's going to die.
Perfect. Okay, well,
that's the assumption.
That is something I excel at in games, dying. This is just right up my alley. But if I can die in a really amusing and fun way, I mean, that's really the big part right here.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of what I went for with the game was like, everybody plays role-playing games for, there's a lot of reasons to play them and there's a lot of things to remember about them. And one of the things that you remember in any given role-playing game are those moments. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the moment where your character dies in some heroic fashion or in some really stupid way, sometimes those are the moments that are memorable. Those are the stories that you tell your friends, that you share with your group and with you talk about at conventions and all that stuff.
Sure.
So I'm just building a game where, you know, hey, have you been playing role playing games for 20 years and don't have a great death story? Here's the game for you.
If you've been playing role playing games for 20 years and you don't have a great death story, I feel sad.
A little bit, right?
Sad for you.
Means you probably got a DM who doesn't want their players to ever die.
They're immortal.
And it depends on what kind of games you're playing. There's plenty of RPGs out there that are, you know, that death is not a big part of the game.
What's most terrifying to you, Craig?
What's terrifying to me? Something that's not in the game because it doesn't really present itself well as a monster.
Oh, okay.
I'm a horror movie fan from way back. I've been watching horror movies since I was like, you know, 11 or 12 years old. I enjoy horror movies and horror literature and everything in a lot of different for a lot of different reasons. And there isn't too much that really grosses me out or makes me not want to watch. There are certain things that can happen in a movie. I have a thing with needles.
Oh.
Especially around the eyes.
Uh-huh.
Yep. That's a little bit of a problem. So that's not strictly a monster. That's like, you know, unless you had like a needle monster, which is terrifying. But one of the things,
got there at the same time.
Those needles aren't coming after you.
True. A cactuar kind of is like that, right? Final Fantasy?
Sure. Those aren't really scary, Nathan.
Have you ever battled one?
They're not deadly.
Deadly and scary are kind of interchangeable for me, but okay.
The type of movie that actually gets to me, and they don't always qualify strictly, usually they're called thrillers. They don't necessarily always qualify as a horror movie, but it's movies about disease.
Yes.
Like, and not like, you know, rage virus or zombieism or something like that, but like literally like, you know, movies like Contagion and stuff like that, where like that could happen. Mm-hmm. And you go, and these characters, you know, die these prolonged, really suffering deaths. That those are, I have to be in the right kind of frame of mind to watch those. Whereas a horror movie, I can watch, like, you know, I can wake up in the morning and watch a horror movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Monster of the Week. That's not too bad.
See, so what you really need is a plague doctor as a monster.
Oh man. Yeah. Somebody going around spreading disease.
Yep.
Oh.
Purposely spreading disease. Yeah. That's icky.
That's
I'm not a fan.
No,
he does it with needles in the eye.
You're evil, Alex.
Only this time of year.
Only this time of year. I beg to differ on that as well. I think it's most of the time. Okay, I have to say though, like Crazy Clown, which is the one I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, that's the PG-13 version of that. That's the version that we put in the Kickstarter video. In the book, it's can I drop an F-bomb here?
Yeah,
it's that fucking clown. And everything on the page is, you know, fucking this and fucking that.
Perfect. I like that.
Which is a little, there's little homages in there. And if you have seen the most recent, the recent It movie, the miniseries, but the movie itself, that fucking clown is a phrase that has meaning to you if you've seen that movie. Yeah, there's all sorts of little nods.
Both will haunt my dreams forever. So
wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah. So I think that was the intent.
That was at least part of the plan. Yes.
If we break down the actual casting call card, has the monster's name, has the monster's title. Of course, I would imagine the movie title is pretty much stay away from the clown.
Well, the movie title, that's actually something that's built into gameplay, is whoever survives gets to name the movie.
Oh, okay. So we don't find out the title until the end.
Yeah. So it's like old school. You can think of it like old school movies, like 1930s, 40s, where they would have like these credit cards of all the people and all the directors and all the people that did the movie and everything. But sometimes the title of the movie wouldn't happen until the end.
Oh, right. They would have like a working title and then they would finalize it at the end. Okay.
Or it would be really small in the opening. Like there's movies out there that don't even have title sequences. Like they just jumps right into the movie and then the final scene ends and fade to black and then boom, up comes the title of the movie. The point is that it's really kind of just meant to be kind of a reward. Like, you know, you managed to get your character to survive. So you get to give the movie its title.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, like Citizen Kane used to just be called Rosebud is a Sled, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa, spoiler, whoa.
Sorry, spoiler for like a 60-year-old movie, sorry. Movie, yeah. Oops, I can't.
Because I'm not watching that movie anytime soon.
I'm sorry, I destroyed that for you. I can't even spoil 10-year-old games.
Red Leaves Scarlet.
No, don't tell me Red Leaves Scarlet, no. I can never watch God with the Wind. Did she get on the plane? Play it again. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? This is spoiler hour for people who like classic movies. For teams. If you're watching Turner Classic Movie on a daily basis, sorry, spoilers ahead. Should have warned you about that.
Hey, everybody, so, the Dirty Dozen? Things go poorly.
Oops. Sorry. Seven Samurai? Yeah, don't get too attached to all of them.
anyway, that crazy clown.
That crazy clown. The basics, this looks like it's mostly like flavor text to kind of understand exactly what the character is, right? Crazy clown wants to kill you, and it's got face paint, and it's punderful. You did make sure to say it's punderful, and yep. I appreciate that.
Loves cracking back jokes.
Yeah, loves cracking back jokes. Exactly. You'll fly, too. Then we get into the actual numbers, and oh boy, numbers. So, body TS, brains TS, mouth TS, spirit TS. What are these numbers to me? What do they mean?
TS is target score. In the game, when you're playing a character, you have a body trait, brains, mouth, and spirit. And body is everything physical, brains is everything mental, mouth is everything social, and spirit is kind of your inner fortitude, guts, willingness to just stand up and fight and just take it, you know, the ability to take punishment or to avoid fear. And when you're at the end of a scene, every scene kind of has like a trait that's called for you to make a check on. Like if you're having an argument, that's a mouth scene. At the end, everybody makes a mouth trait check. Okay. And your traits are rated between 1 and 4. You have 4 traits. You've got 1 that's a 1, a 1 that's a 2, 1 that's a 3, 1 that's a 4. And the lower, the better. Now, that's a little weird. I know. It takes a minute to wrap your head around it with the mechanics, but it all makes sense.
Okay.
So basically, you know, it's the idea being that your number 1 trait is the one that's rated 1. Think about it that way.
Okay.
So whatever's a 1, that's your best thing.
Okay.
And so when you get to the end of that scene and everybody has to make trait checks, you make whatever you have a pool. You start with a pool of 6d6, and that's your dice pool. And whenever you make a trait check, you'll roll your entire dice pool. And you will need to hit that target number that we just mentioned here.
Sure.
And it's always 3, 4, or 5 on d6s. And you're looking for that number or better.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a number of successes equal to the rank of your trait. So if your body, for example, is a 1 and you're making a body trait check, you only need 1 success on those 6 dice. So you're better at it because you're almost always going to get 1 good die. Most of the time, you're going to succeed at that if you have a 1. Now, if you're rolling 6 dice and you're rolling your trait that's a 4 at a target number of 5, mm-hmm. it's a pretty slim chance that you're going to roll 4 fives or better on 66. Okay. When you wrap up your trait checks, everybody in the group that's in the scene, you either succeeded or failed at your trait check.
Okay.
If you failed at your trait check, you narrate kind of how the scene ends poorly for you, how things go badly for you, and you lose one of your dice. You succeed, you narrate how everything went really well for you, and you make somebody else in the scene lose one of their dice.
Oh,
so that dice pool of 6 is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, and that's a countdown to your character's death. When you are out of dice, your character dies.
You get to dictate how they die?
Yes, you do. You absolutely get to narrate exactly how your character dies.
Beautiful. Okay. So when it comes to the scores for your character, how do we determine those? Like, why do I have a good body score? Did I work out? Is that why I have a body?
It has to do with the character that you're playing. If you look at the other preview, there's a few characters at the end. Each of the game comes with 16 character archetypes. 8 of them are kind of your traditional teenage young adult type. So you got a jock and a cheerleader and a nerd and a loner. Mm-hmm. And then the other 8 are the kind of more, you know, the older characters. You've got a cop and a soldier and a business person and a teacher and a parent. The traits are already set for you. Basically, when you play a character, you're going to pick a name for your character, and you're going to make a couple of choices about the character that kind of differentiate you from other characters of that type. Mm. But your 4 traits are set. Like the jock always has a body of 1 because the jock is all about his physicality or her physicality for that matter. Yeah. It's all gender neutral. You can be a kick-ass volleyball player, women's team or whatever, softball. Softball gal.
You should be a sports ball player.
Yes.
A sports person.
Yes.
Sports ball.
Go sports.
And each character has 2 different quirks that are kind of variations of that basic archetype. And they come with kind of some special capabilities that come with that. And then every character has some stuff that they can use in the game as well. And for example, for the jock, one of the things on the stuff list is a sports ball or sports stick of your choice. So you could, your character can be walking around with a basketball or a baseball bat or whatever.
Can I use a fencing saber?
You can absolutely use a fencing saber if you are a jock and want to take that as your sports stick.
I like a saber as a sports stick. It seems
it is. It's just a bendy stick that you use to play the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sabers would really make lacrosse more interesting. We got to get on that.
Swords would make a lot of sports more interesting.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I can't wait. I do love the fact that, like, all of the characters with cards are autopsy reports. That's pretty great.
That came from my layout guy, Todd Crapper. And yes, you heard that name right. Todd Crapper. He's got a good sense of humor.
That's what happens when you die laughing.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of humor about it. He suggested, we got talking about the character sheets, and I suggested the idea of having the little generic outline of a person so that you could, like, with a red pen as you were playing, you could mark up, like, what happens to your character. And he said, that sounds an awful lot like an autopsy report. And I said, you're right, it does. And he went looking and found and did kind of the whole layout to make it an autopsy report, which also reinforces the idea that, yeah, your character's going to die.
Absolutely. At least I know that I'm not getting out alive, pretty much. Like, the best option I have is that my autopsy report is going to be, like, post-dated, and I'm going to get through this for a while.
You'll die in the first scene in the sequel.
In the sequel, yeah.
I feel like you could do, with an autopsy report, you could also get away with doing a living will as part of the character sheet, if
sure.
you wanted to.
Yeah.
Who can I give my stuff to?
Yeah, I want that saber. I'm throwing Alex under the bus. I want his saber now. Cause of death, saber-induced injury by unknown source. I don't know how you got that. Sorry. I must have really wanted it. So did you take, like, these archetypes from those movies that you really like those horror movies? Were you kind of working off of that, gleaning from that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's just, there are certain types of characters you see in horror movies, and there's certain kind of variations of those characters. And so I built, you know, the archetype is about as generic as you can get. It's like, here's just like this one word descriptor of what this character is like. And then the quirk kind of gives you a little bit of a twist to what that character is. And there's things in there like the cheerleader has one of the cheerleader's quirks is the jerk. So it's the jerk. It's the cheerleader that, you know, has a insult target and is always picking on somebody and is kind of just the jerk in the movie. You know, there's other characters in there that have, like, you know, the everybody's buddy. They, like, you know, everybody likes them, or they're a sidekick to somebody.
Sure.
So they're always seen with another character, or you know, there's one that's kind of like the reluctant hero, the kind of the unassuming hero. Like, you don't think that they're going to become the hero, but then they kind of pull it together at the end. Now, that's not to say that helps you to survive.
No,
because the reluctant hero may very well get killed very early, but that's okay.
Absolutely, you only had this one movie contract, so it. It's not guaranteed.
It's not even that your character is killed off. You were actually killed off.
Yeah, it's Phantom of the Opera. Oh, there should be a Phantom.
It's the Twilight Zone movie. There were actors that were actually killed while making the movie.
Really?
I'm not going to get into the details of it, but it's a pretty gruesome situation that happened there.
Yeah.
Look it up if you're interested. That's like, you hear every so often you hear about, like, stunt people. That's usually when somebody dies during a movie, it's usually a stunt person. Mm-hmm. But the actor thing is pretty rare. Like, there's Brandon Lee that had, you know, there was the accident with the firearm, but the Twilight Zone has death associated with it as well.
But
hey, real quick aside, as long as we're going to talk stupid movie trivia, you want to get weirded out and wonder what the hell just happened? Watch Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
When Dorothy and the others are going through, I think it's when they're in the haunted forest and everything starts to get spooky. And when like, maybe it's when the first tree attacks, or like when everything kind of kicks off.
Okay.
In the haunted forest, the Scarecrow has a goddamn gun. He is holding a six shooter revolver in, like, one shot, and he's pointing it around, and then it's gone.
I dreamed up a revolver in my head to battle trees.
He doesn't need courage if he's got a pistol.
Yeah, but he's the guy with no brain is the one with the pistol.
No, well, the lion doesn't need the courage then.
Oh man, it's hard to battle trees or Trents. Is it Trents? I think it's officially tree ants
or Ents.
Ents
or Ents, depending if you're in Middle Earth or not.
Yeah.
A tree monster would be terrifying.
I don't have a tree monster. I don't have a plant monster in the game,
no?
Although. There are some good horror movies out there with plant monsters. There's some also terrible ones, but
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors is great. That's got comedic elements to it. But there's The Ruins.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever seen that? It's The Ruin or The Ruins. I don't remember if it's plural or not. That's about a creeping vine thing that it's pretty gross, actually. There's like some it's like body invasion by plant. There's also a plant killer movie called Splinter that is really good, surprisingly good. It's a very low budget. It's all, most of it's in one location. Really, really good, very tense, and some very cool effects.
God, I can't remember. Was it Michael Rooker that was in that one?
Rooker, you might be thinking of.
There's another.
Well, he was Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, but he was also in Slither, not Splinter. Slither.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of.
Slither is the one, yeah, with the little slug creatures that start to infect people and take over their minds, and then some of them become like they all get. It's all big body horror stuff. They all get melded together in this giant mass, and Michael Rooker's character is kind of this just raging jackass throughout the movie, but he ends up getting good at that character.
He's played that character in a lot of movies.
He does play the jackass character really well.
It's your old buddy Merle. Thanks, thanks, Mike. Oh, man.
Mary Poppins.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of way in the game that you could, like, create your own monster?
Yeah, there's going to be a little make your own monster and make your own character sheet, like a blank, you know, basically a blank version of each of those at the back of the book. Oh. So you'll be able to make those. This is one of those games that, like, the book will be nice to be able to hand around for to run acts and scenes and to read the rules and to just kind of take with you. But it's, you know, given that, you know, it's all character archetypes and monster pages and everything, it'll be one of those things that one of those games where it's handy to have the PDF. So you can just print out the character pages right from the PDF and print out like a monster or two if you're going to play. And then you can always print out copies of the blank ones and make stuff up.
Yeah, I know exactly what I'm going to make up. I'm going to make Michael Rooker as Mary Poppins. I think that is the scariest thing. Alex, do you even get that reference?
No.
You haven't seen Guardians Vol. 2?
No, I haven't seen. I'm so behind on Marvel right now that it's not even worth mentioning.
Well, here's what you do. If you're not in the right place to get caught up on all of it, at least watch the two Guardians movies.
Yeah, the two Guardians movies are great. And then I liked Civil War a lot. And you kind
Civil
of
Civil War means I need to watch the rest of the other ones first. Sorry.
That's why I'm saying watch Guardians. The two Guardians movies stand alone. You don't need to watch anything else.
He's right about that. Yeah. Okay. You can just watch the two Guardians movies. They don't really involve any of the other.
So I'm going to go watch those now. See you later. Bye.
Okay, great. I'm going to miss you so much.
I'll replace me with a clown for you. Don't.
Whoa.
No, not a clown. Please don't. You know, the sad thing is, since I can't see Alex right now, he might actually be dressed like a clown. And that's why.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, this is exactly why you didn't want your webcam on, isn't it?
I'm waiting for him to do a, you know, with a nose or something. There you go.
What happened to Allie? Yeah, I like the setup for this. So this doesn't take very long to actually play, as you were saying.
If you know the system, you can play in about an hour to 2 hours, depending on how many players. You really need about four to make it work well. It can take as many as 8 pretty easily. I have found that the sweet spot is 6. That's my opinion.
Okay.
6 people killing each other.
6 people screwing each other over so the killer doesn't get to them.
Kind of.
Do you have different subgenres or plots for the movies?
Not specifically. I mean, each of the monsters kind of lends itself toward a subgenre. You've got the slasher. You've got like the body horror blobby thing. So if the players are familiar with the tropes of horror movies and with the tropes of those specific subgenres, you can kind of, like, the scenes are just prompts. Like, here's a scene that's, like I said, like about an argument, or here's one where the monster attacks, or here's one where the characters attend a party. You can take that scene and weave whatever you want for tropes into it. You know, just play the cliches, or you can take the cliches and kind of turn them on their head and do something different. And
you even have a little thing about horror movie tropes. Use your tropes. That should just be a general piece of advice. Use your tropes, folks. That's good life advice from Die Laughing. This is a game where I'm probably going to die, but if I'm really lucky, maybe I won't die. But there is going to be a terrifying creature that's trying to kill me. And at least hilarity will probably ensue if I try really hard.
That's the hope.
Great. Excellent. Sold. Just out of curiosity, because you didn't make the game all by yourself. You had a few people that helped you out.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about some of the creative people that were on this. Your editor, your art and graphics people. We already talked about Mr. Crapper. We already talked about him. Vincent Harper.
He did the editing. He's going to do a proofread at the end as well. I got hooked up with him through Todd.
Okay.
Because Vincent has done work for Todd on some of his games. And so this was my first time working with Vincent, but he's a horror movie fan and he was really stoked to get involved. He enjoyed reading through the whole thing and is looking forward to seeing the whole final thing. He'll be, he did the basic copy editing pass and he'll give it a proofread once it's all laid out and pretty and make sure I didn't overuse commas, which as I am wont to do.
Yeah, commas always find their way into sentences when they probably shouldn't, but I am guilty of using way too many of them as well. And I have to talk about our artist because I find the art charming and disturbing at the same time. The artist in question is Beth Varney.
Yeah, actually, she's worked on all of my games.
Okay.
She was the cover artist and also did some of the interior work for the first game, Murders and Acquisitions.
Yes.
She was, you could probably call her the prime artist. She did more individual interior pieces than any other single artist. And then for Capers, which we have talked about on Delve, that just fulfilled a couple of weeks ago. That's published. That's out there. She did the entire book. She did every single illustration.
Yes, I remember that. And I really liked the comic book style kind of graphics that she put in this. She has a wonderful range of artistic styles that she can bring to these games. That's really rare to see.
She's got some, you know, I've mostly asked for kind of comic book level kind of stuff because that's just kind of where my games went. If you take a look at her portfolio, she does portraiture and kind of more painterly kind of stuff and all sorts of stuff. She does work, you know, most of her professional work as a professional freelancer is in indie comics. So, you know, she's got that style down pat. Like she can crunch out a sketch and then do a line work off the sketch pretty efficiently. So she is working right now. and I've approved all the sketches and provided notes, and she's doing up the remaining artwork for the game, which is mostly monsters.
Oh, excellent. And I should mention, you had so many lovely playtesters, and I think that we are duty-bound to say that you had a bunch of players at CadeCon only because we might be sponsoring that particular con this year.
Yeah, I played the game with a bunch of people at a Catacon last year, as well as a few other conventions. And I had a few groups that had like home games, and like I sent them like, okay, here's everything, and I want you to play these two monsters, and I want you and your group to play these two monsters, and I want you and your group to play these two monsters, and you know, pick whatever characters you want, use different characters for the second monster, just try them all out. You know, did some tweaking, and the game came together pretty cleanly, actually.
Yeah. And is that similar to what you did at like PAX and Gen Con?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, excellent. And I do notice one other name in the special thanks, James Intricasso, who I'm somewhat familiar with. What did James do in terms of the game?
Well, James and Rudy, mm-hmm. Bass was on there as well.
Yeah.
And their names are going to be joined by some other names as well. Generally, what I try to do is I throw a special thanks out to people that helped in ways that aren't really quantified by all the other stuff up above. And special mm-hmm. thanks in this case for James and Rudy, because we recorded an actual play of Die Laughing to put on their podcast network. Don't Split the Podcast Network. There's some other actual play people that are going to get their name in there as well. You know, like with Capers, I had the guy who wrote the article for me for that made it up onto Geek and Sundry.
Yeah,
he got a thank you. You know, there's different people. The two people on there, and the special thanks there, Matt Sherwood and Eric Wurzler. Those are my longtime friends that I don't see nearly often enough, who I watched a lot of horror movies or bad movies with.
Excellent.
So they kept me on track for all those years that led me to actually create a game.
And also a special thanks to Slender Man. and to Michael Rooker as Mary Poppins. That's really nice. And then, of course, a huge piece we should mention where Kickstart backers will go.
This is an early version. There's actually in the final version, there's more space for that, just in the hopes that there will be a lot of Kickstarter backers.
Right.
I'm not sure when this goes up as we record this early, but if it is Tuesday, October 30th or later, As you're listening to this, and it is still before Thanksgiving, that means the Kickstarter is running right now.
So it actually starts on October 30th?
Day before Halloween, baby.
I was going to say, it feels like there's some synergy here. Like you planned it that way.
This ain't my first rodeo.
Hey, look, folks, you like Halloween? What about if you had a game called Die Laughing? Wouldn't that be fun? Yes. Yes, it would.
I sure hope people will find that fun.
What are the tier levels going to be like for the Kickstarter?
Oh, this is the best part. There is going to be a funding goal, and there is going to be a backer level, and that is it. You get the game. You get it'll be $10 for the PDF of the game, and you'll also get a discount link to buy a soft cover version at cost later, which will only cost a few dollars, plus your shipping. So you can get that. If you want the physical book, you can get that super cheap. And there's not a whole bunch of support material or additional stuff that, you know, there's nothing to pad the book out. It's like everything that I've developed is ready to go. It's going to be in the book, and I'm just keep it simple.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit of an experiment for me, because my previous Kickstarters and a lot of RPG Kickstarters out there always have all that extra stuff. And this is going to be like really, really tight and sweet. Just like, boom, $10, you get a game.
This is how much you pay. This is what you get. Boom.
Yep.
Right out.
And it'll turn over very quickly, because it is done. As we're talking, layout is nearing completion. Artwork will be likely done before the Kickstarter goes live.
Nice.
So it'll be a very quick turnover.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask, because if it's a PDF and not normally a physical book until later, then it seems like it could be done like relatively very fast.
Right. You just want to make sure that the PDF and the physical book jive. So given that everything's written and gotten a full edit, assuming the layout and the illustrations are put together, it's really just getting the names for the Kickstarter backers and getting those in there, and then just running a proof copy and doing a proofread, and then boom, you're on your way.
It's going to be a quick turnaround.
If I had to guess, maybe a month would be the best case scenario. If we can get the proof, turn the proof over pretty quickly. With physical books and print on demand, you're always at the mercy of how quickly they print the book and ship it to you. And one downside to this is that we will be doing that proof process during the November, December realm when print on demand orders are higher. So it might, you know, the actual print of a book might take a little longer to get the book printed, and then, you know, shipping, I'll pay for the expedited shipping. You know, hopefully it's pretty simple. It's all done. It's just like, it needs a proofread. So hopefully it'll only need one proof pass, and then boom.
So I have no doubt that you're going to be able to get that to people in pretty quick time. Of course, you've done that with all of your other Kickstarters. So
each of them took about 6 months to turn over, but that was primarily because they were much larger and had a lot more, you know, primarily it was layout and artwork that still needed to be done.
Sure.
Whereas with this, I'm biting the bullet and putting the money up front, because it's a little cheaper to do, just because it's a smaller game, to get everything out in front first, and then just kind of recoup costs on the end and use Kickstarter as a marketing tool.
Makes sense. And I'll tell you, even 6 months as a time frame for the other games that you had is pretty short compared to a lot of Kickstarters that I've seen. I've backed things where it's like, well, in about a year, I might eventually get the product that I, and I really wish that was hyperbole, but it is not. I'm fully aware of that. Like if you back something in 2018, I might get it by 2019. So when you're telling me about these fairly short turnover times, it's really exciting.
I did all of that on purpose.
I
set up all the way the Kickstarters went and what was done before the Kickstarter. And that was all done so that, you know, I'm nearing the point now where I can turn this one over fairly quickly. And I can officially say, you know, I'm an RPG developer who's done three Kickstarters and turned over each one of them on time or faster, and always within 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty good thing to be able to say.
Yep.
It will be very good when you release the fourth one. Which is actually like Die Laughing, but in Capers era prohibition, which is going to be great, because really the Die Laughing part is what happens when you're running away from people that are trying to stop your running operation and navigating all of that.
Yeah, a lot of that dying just involves getting a lot of Tommy gun bullets in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that'll do it. Yeah. For some reason, that doesn't seem quite as scary as, you know, Pennywise.
Because it's not horror, it's just murder at that point.
Nailed it. Mic drop.
And Alex was worried that I took away his one-liner. He found another one. He always does. Quick reminder again that Die Laughing will be coming to Kickstarter on October 30th. And then hopefully you will be the one to survive the slasher film that we have created here today. On the next episode, Craig is still with us, and we are going to be talking about a bunch of things that are very spooky for the holiday, including some of the monsters that you can come up with on your own, because there is a way to do that and Die Laughing, and you can imagine the kinds of ridiculous things we came up with. Well, you won't have to imagine it, actually. You can just listen to it next week. If you want to find out more information about Craig's other games, we've talked about Capers previously on the show, you can go over to nerdburgergames.com. While you are on the internet, how about checking out delvecast.com? That's where Delve lives, as well as Orbital and Attempting to Play. Any projects that we really work on are over there. And if you happen to, why not check out the Patreon link and possibly even become a patron for the show? For just $1 a month, our lowest tier level, actually, you can get all of the additional content. We have raw, unedited episodes of the show before I go and do all of my editing magic, so you can hear it in its raw, unadulterated form from the beginning, as well as some exclusive content that right now you can only find as a patron on the site. And I would like to thank our shiny level patrons, Bonnie Ainsworth and Dom Perry, for doing just that. You can find Delve on iTunes, Google Play, and everywhere else that podcasts are distributed. I was going to say sold, and then I realized, no, podcasts really don't get sold. They're free. They are free. You can find them there. Please rate and review and subscribe when you go. That is always appreciated. And as always, you can find us on Twitter. I am at Citanium, Alex is at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast. You can also find Craig on there at Nerdburger Craig. So I hope everybody is enjoying this wonderful time of year where we get to scare the crap out of everyone else. It's magical. It really is. And hopefully no killer clowns come your way. But, you know, if you happen to see somebody in a hockey mask or somebody in a fedora that looks like they spent a little too much time in the sun, my advice is to run. Especially just run faster than the other person next to you. That is a key to surviving any kind of slasher film. Pro tip. I hope everybody enjoys that pro tip. And we will see you on the next episode. Goodbye! That is hard on the vocal cords. I should not do that anymore. Just wanted to open something up so I have it in front of me. Oh my god, crazy clown! Now I have something. Did you open the PDF, Alex?
Yeah, I saw the clown
well,
dancing.
That's great. Yeah, and in no way am I getting thoughts that Pennywise is going to invade my dreams. But hey, you know what? Anything works. Oh, it's ponderful. Sweet. Okay, so at least I have.